Hey everybody, welcome to Game In My Whole Life. I'm your host George, and with me I have the lovely, the fabulous, the only Jamel. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing fantastic, George. Thank you for the lovely intro. Always appreciate being here with you.
I do like to talk up hype and build up your presence. It's what we do. Now, buddy, we have quite a bit to discuss today, don't we? Like, thanks to E3 being around the corner, it certainly keeps people like us busy, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots of leaks coming out, some of which may be true, some of which may be not. It's always going to be fun trying to figure out which ones are true, which ones aren't. But then I guess we'll have to see more from E3 and more of the information that's coming out to see what's worth talking about and what isn't, though.
Exactly. But thankfully, thanks to these leaks, a lot of developers have had to confirm certain games which they may have not been ready to confirm it yet. But since the leaks were already circling, they're like, oh, we better do some damage control if the leak's already out. And that's what brings us to one of today's many discussions. Before we do start off, just want to give a shout out as usual to everyone listening in from our Facebook group, Positive Gaming Space. As usual, that group just, it's my favorite place to hang out. There's just so many passionate gamers. Every day we have different discussions. And some of our very topics today come straight from that group because, you know, I like to post my best thoughts there. We get a lot of feedback. And you know what? If it's good enough for the group, it's good enough for the podcast. Speaking of which, one topic which I'll just go over very briefly is at the moment, Jamel, I'm loving a game which I absolutely hated at launch, and you've probably heard of it.
Yeah,
many people have heard of it because it's not a new game, but of course I'm talking about Watch Dogs. Now, this was, you know, the supposed GTA killer from Ubisoft, which came out in 2014. So this is a four-year-old game, but I do have a reason for bringing it up. Now, when this game launched, I hated it. I'm going to be honest, I hated it. Yeah, sadly, so did most people. And the reason being is, of course, the overhype which Ubisoft put towards the game. You know, there was a ridiculous amount of promotions and talking it up. And the main thing was what got everyone's attention, including my own, was they revealed a very impressive E3 trailer of Watch Dogs that looked phenomenal. Like, it just made you start thinking of that old school debate, you know, next gen graphics, which we don't really use that word anymore because everything's next gen these days.
Yeah.
But when Watch Dogs launched, it looked amazing. Like, did you happen to see that trailer by any chance? Like the very first one that just made everyone think, oh my God, this looks amazing.
I did. And we all saw it like 4 years ago now. It was kind of one of those things where you were, it was a game that was set for the time. You know, people were worried about privacy and people spying on them and all that kind of things. And, you know, who watches the people that collects all the information out there, which in a funny way is still relevant because of all the things that have happened with Facebook recently. Yeah, like everyone was just sort of jumping up and down with excitement about how cool and how relevant the game seemed. So I'm kind of curious as well, given that this game was, you know, widely panned, why 4 years later it still has life, because that's not normally typical for a game like that.
No, not really, and especially in the day of age that we are in, you know, with there being so much online focus, like, why is it still relevant? Or more importantly, if I'm outright admitting I hated the game at launch, why do I want to talk about it today, and why did I post a very detailed article on it on Positive Gaming Space? And the reason is simple, is I believe in, you know, respect where due, you know. So even if I'm outright against something, if later on certain things change, or I realize my own opinion was wrong, or whatever the case being, I always want to address it. I don't want to be stubborn for the sake of being stubborn. And I have publicly, you know, used this game as the prime example of not buying a launch game, especially if it's from Ubisoft, because you don't get the end product that even the developers themselves intended. You know, they have their launch windows. They have to make that deadline, and it launches. And when this game launched, it got hit in the face by two things. One, it did not look anywhere near as good as our famous E3 demo, which just outraged everyone, because if you buy a game, and for a lot of people, even though it's a superficial thing, for a lot of people, they bought it just because they wanted to experience that amazing looking world they saw in the demo. And they got it, and it looked nothing like that. And a lot of people, you know, just lost it. They demanded their money back. I've actually spoken to people at a couple EB game stores around that time, because I was just randomly curious. And a lot of the workers told me they actually hated that game because they have too many customers coming back and demanding their money. Because they'll be like, this game was meant to look like this, and you sold me a product that looks nothing like that. And he's like, we didn't sell you that product. Ubisoft did. Like, we're just, you know, the middleman. But sure, he's your money back. And the second thing was, it had a lot of bugs, which, you know, back then, yes, Ubisoft even then wasn't so great with bugs, but they weren't as bad as they are now. Like, at the moment now, for Ubisoft game launches, you pretty much deliberately don't buy it for a bit just so they can sort out those bugs. It's just something you've accepted. And back then, you know, game not looking as good and buggy, people lost it. So now that I've laid the groundwork, the reason why I want to address it today is on Uplay, which is Ubisoft's version of Steam, where you can download their games online. A little while ago, they had Watch Dogs for free. And as my slight, you know, sticking it to Ubi, I downloaded the game because I thought, ha, I'm going to get it for free. So I downloaded it. And previously, I had played it a lot at my friend's house, at Theo's house, actually. He's been on the podcast several times. And I enjoyed it, but, you know, I didn't enjoy it as much as I would have liked. And, you know, in the end, I just never got it myself. But when I recently started playing Watch Dogs on PC, and I played it with different expectations and different set of eyes, and benefited greatly from the fact that heaps of patches and features have been added to the game since launch, and as it is today, it's pretty much a completely different game. One, I'm not going into it expecting it to look like something it's not. You know, I knew that up front. Gorgeous looking game, but, you know, I'm not being misled about anything. And two, the bugs are gone. I haven't found any bugs during my playthrough of it, which is a big deal, because at launch, a lot of other players would literally, and I love this picture because it's been floating around the internet, they'll literally see people, like NPCs, driving around the city, right? And you can't see the car. And you just see like a floating person sitting in the air.
Yeah.
Float past you because the car graphic never loaded.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So that's it. It is. And not only did I hate this game before, but for reasons which I won't really list here because this isn't a review, I just want to bring it up, is I actually love this game now. The game which I'm playing at the moment on my computer and what was launched is night and day difference. And that just triggers my whole debate on, you know, I discussed this during the last podcast, was, you know, it's no longer safe to just buy a game on launch day unless you already trust the developer.
Yeah.
So, like, I love Ubisoft, you know. I think they do some great games. And I also know where it suits them, they can be dodgy. So when they release a game, I wait before I buy it. If another company, like, say, Nintendo releases a game, there is literally no point in waiting. Because, one, the prices on the game isn't going to drop anytime soon. And, two, like, they do give patches and stuff, but it's more adding features as opposed to doing improvements. So you may as well buy it straight away and you don't need to wait. So, yeah, just some food for thought that it's, I don't know, it's a shame. Like, if this game launched later than it did, with all the bugs sorted out and none of the misleading advertisement, I reckon there would be a much bigger install base for the game.
Hmm.
And it's just a shame. I'm playing a great game today, which sucked when it launched.
That's weird, right? Because you sort of say to yourself, why would you take the hit to your brand with releasing a game that obviously just needed more development time? You know, I mean, yeah. What we call patches, if they hadn't released it, would just be extra development time. Because that kind of thing, because we were talking about this last night, where there are certain, and you mentioned it a second ago, where certain developers have a reputation, and that's a reputation that you can depend on. You know, so you buy a Blizzard game, you know it's going to be polished within an inch of its life, and it's going to, you know, shine on
another
your computer
quality
screen.
Studio.
Exactly. Or or BioWare, or Naughty Dog, or did we come up with another one last night? I can't remember.
CD Projekt Red?
Yeah,
the,
CD Projekt
Witcher
Red.
Developers?
Yeah. Like, for example, brand is so important in any business, you know, and if you put out, you know, unfinished games and you get the outrage machine going, you are going to suffer so much blowback, the same way that EA did with Battlefront. That is so toxic for your brand. I just can't believe that they value these development schedules being so tight versus the actual putting out of good games, giving them good, providing a good customer experience and making your brand look good. Which I think leads into our next point, right, George?
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you introduce the topic, mate.
Okay. So recently you put on into Positive Gaming Space, which if you hadn't have put it there, I would have no idea this is happening. About Assassin's Creed Odyssey being set in ancient Greece, which will apparently be at this year's E3. Is that been confirmed yet?
Yes, yeah. Ubisoft has confirmed themselves that, you know, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is a thing. It is set in ancient Greece, and yeah, they'll be covering it at E3, which is like a week away. So we don't need to wait long at all.
Yeah. So I bet none of these.
Oh, it is a week away already.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry,
it is.
I just looked at my calendar and I'm like, huh, that's like 5 days earlier in the future than I thought it was.
That's how dates work.
yes.
But none of you listeners or people in Positive Gaming Space need to be shocked that I am not an Assassin's Creed game, but I posted in the thread that you guys put up there that was like, oh my god, they pressed the button that would get me to play an Assassin's Creed game because I love ancient Greece. It's so cool. If they put out another game like Origins. If they put out another game like Origins, then it'll be fantastic. But have they fallen into the trap of not giving their developers enough time to make a quality game? That is an interesting question.
That is the question. Because, yeah, you're right. Origins actually launched October 27th. So about 8 months ago, give or take. And it's quite surprising to already be knowing that we're going to be hearing about the next Assassin's Creed, because the exciting aspect of Origins wasn't so much the fact that it was in ancient Egypt, but it was the fact that, you know, Ubisoft seemed to be taking a new leaf and were working longer on the game instead of releasing, you know, another yearly release of an Assassin's Creed. And as we discussed last night over dinner, we're both excited but cautious about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, because it has only been 8 months since their last game, so not long at all. And if at E3 they're like, right, Odyssey is coming out in 2 months, that's a very short development cycle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm worried they're riding the hype train as they've done in the past and will once again release a game which, if it had the time, would be fantastic, but it's not going to have the time. Like, it makes me nervous, especially the irony as well that the reason why I started playing Watch Dogs, apart from the fact it was free and I downloaded it a while ago, was because I couldn't get my Assassin's Creed Origins game to work. I can't launch it. I can't launch it. And I've had a look online, and sadly I found a lot of other people who also can't launch the game. Now, some people don't have a PC good enough to run it, fair enough. Other people have behemoths of a PC gaming rig and they still can't launch it. And the issue is so common that if you go to the Ubisoft website and, you know, click into the area which is for Assassin's Creed Origins, there's a sticky note already sitting there saying, are you having trouble launching the game? So that's how common it is, right?
God.
And the thing that grinds me on this is either it's just a glitch that everyone else has, or my CPU isn't new enough to run the game, which it is a slightly outdated CPU, right? But the thing is, this CPU combined with my graphics card and RAM and this and that, every other game that has come out to date, some I can run on high settings, others medium settings with a couple set to low, you know? And that's just because I want very smooth performances. If I didn't care about a frame drop here and there, then a lot of games I'd actually be running on high. And what seems to have possibly happened with Assassin's Creed Origins is if you don't meet the bare minimum for the CPU, just that one component, it doesn't let you launch the game at all. Like, I don't have the option of getting into the game and, you know, maybe I'll just play the graphics settings at medium to low, you know?
Yeah.
Or most of them at low if need be. The game just outright will not launch for me. And so that is a very poor decision, you know?
Mm.
Like, I should have the right to run the game on medium to low settings if I want. Like, they can't make that decision for me. And it's not an official decision. It's not like they've outright admitted it, hey, we won't let the game from launching. But it's either that, or it's just the bug that people with much newer gaming systems can't launch the game with. I have that as well. So with that in mind, I can't enjoy Origins. And then I see this announcement from Ubisoft that, hey, Odyssey is coming out. And I'm like, how about you fix up the other game first?
so I can
launch it.
It's, do you know what, like when you were saying how it grinds your gears before, what really frustrates me about some of these developers and how they do their graphics and how they push the envelope, so to speak, and require systems to have these massive rigs and things like that, is you play a game like Witcher 3, which is 2-3 years old by now, but most of these games either don't look as good as Witcher 3, in my opinion, or there's a slight incremental difference that doesn't seem to warrant, you know, people needing these flash new computers that, you know, like a large number of people don't necessarily have the most up-to-date CPU or etc. And it just seems to be they're not optimizing how they use things and aren't putting the effort in to make the games compatible with different systems and different bits of hardware. I'm not an expert in this area, but it just seems lazy, you know, like they haven't taken the time to make their game backwards compatible with older hardware, where, you know, a game like Witcher 3, you can, provided you don't have anything completely ancient, you can run that game and have it not look terrible.
Which is a testimony to the developers, CD Projekt Red, because that very same game that you're saying is very hardware friendly, and even if you don't have the best rig in the world, you can still run it on the maximum settings, is one of the best looking games out to date as well. So you're right, that shows the power of optimization. And you know, this games are made up of so many millions of components that it can get, you know, a bit overwhelming. But it's true, if you put the time in, anyone should be able to play the game for the most part, as long as you have those required settings. Because you can be lazy, you can be like, right, you put it to low settings, then we just blur out the textures.
Yeah.
You know, the lighting becomes weaker, we just do some default scale backs, and if you can run it, too bad. And then you have other developers that will take the extra time to change actual game assets to make it run better on low settings. Like, say you have a character model and it's made up of lots of polygons, which is just, you know, the faces is what makes the object look smooth.
Hmm.
And say on high settings, that polygon is like 12,000. It's like something ridiculously high. And it's the main character, that's why it looks good. And when you put on low settings, you can, yeah, like I said before, just lower the textures or whatever. Or you can swap that model out for a different model, which isn't 12,000 polygons, you know? And maybe that one is just 5. Is that extra work? Yes, because, you know, you're paying extra people to make that separate model and it ups the workload. But the end result of that is people with older rigs can enjoy your game, you know, and it's a nice smooth experience, and it's all about those extra efforts. So yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait until Assassin's Creed Odyssey does launch. Like, you and I both agree that the setting is awesome. Like ancient Greece, apart from the fact that I'm Greek, like I'm not going to be waving, you know, the flag or anything, but the setting itself is cool, and that's one of the drawing points of Assassin's Creed, is where is it going to be next. And I want that series to thrive. It's a good game series, but give it the time it needs. Yeah.
By the way, now Witcher 3 came out on 19th of May 2015, just to make that point.
2015, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's a very relevant game, and a lot of, you know, PC enthusiasts still compare their system rigs on that game to see how smoothly they can run it. Now, another bit of news which has come, it's not new news, it's just more news, is news on Mega Man 11. Now, that is a very exciting thing. Long-time listeners of this podcast series know that you and I are huge fans. In fact, the very first episode we did on this podcast was discussing Mega Man 11.
Yeah.
You know, they recently released a trailer, a new one. How good does it look? Are you pumped for this game as much as I am?
I'm so pumped. It looks good. It looks like Mega Man. We've still got that small scale that we were talking about, how they seem to have taken, you know, like the actual screen and zoomed it out a bit. So it remains to be seen as to whether how that will impact things like, you know, how much things are going to be on the screen at once and whether that's going to influence gameplay and things like that. The textures themselves look very smooth, very shiny. The game doesn't look like it has, it's very graphically intensive, you know, it's not going to break any records for its, you know, graphics or anything like that, but it just has that thing of it looks really smooth, it animates really well, it
looks very appealing. You're right, like I doubt, like, all the current gen consoles will be able to run it, and that's why it's launching on all of them, including the Switch. And if it was coming out on PC, I'm sure you wouldn't need a powerhouse at all. But you're right, the smoothness of the textures, it reminds me of, like, you know, when you play a Nintendo game, and you have, like, bright colors and so forth. You don't expect anything super detailed, but it just looks appealing, you know? And so does this game.
Yeah, it's just got that thing of where it doesn't need to be magical graphical masterpiece. It just needs to look good. And just everything about this game, even some of like the background things look really simple compared to the more detailed things in the foreground, but it just sort of works. It has that kind of cartoony style, because I'm looking at some screenshots now as we speak, and everything, it looks very, has like a really high visual fidelity. You don't confuse anything, because obviously when you're playing a platformer, everything's happening around you at a really fast pace. So yeah, you don't want your eye being distracted. You want everything to be really clearly defined, so you can, you know, see what's a rocket being shown at you, and see what's like, you know, a little metal hat, you know, wandering around on the ground that's going to bounce off your shots.
Oh, those little metal hat guys. I love those guys.
And, you know, all of the little things like the powers that you transform into, that instead of just being a palette swap, they seem to be like we were discussing in the first episode, where Mega Man's look actually changes.
I love that detail. Like, he transforms with the actual special ability he's changing into, as opposed to it just being, you know, color palette swap.
And have you heard about this double gear mechanic that they're introducing?
Yeah, I have. Can you remind me what that's about, though, and for listeners who maybe don't know what we're talking about?
So what they're saying is that there's going to be like a gears that you can basically collect and equip, you know. For example, one will let you slow time, for example.
Oh, okay, that's right, and, yeah.
And another, you know, I think there's going to be multiple gears by the sounds of it. I've only heard of two.
That's what I've heard as well, yeah.
There's only two have been described so far. If there's only going to be two, I don't know. But basically, there's a kind of a heat mechanic so that if you, you know, because you can actually activate two gears at once, but if you do that for too long, Mega Man overheats and then you can't use the gears for a while. You know, they go on cooldown. So...
Oh, that's actually really cool. I hadn't read that part that he can overheat, and I guess as a android, you know, that makes sense. I hope he goes like all hot or red.
Hopefully he's got like steam clouds coming off of him and stuff. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, just extra things to draw you into the world. And just one other thing I want to draw attention to, which you said earlier, I just thought it was great and wanted to give you a bit of praise for that. Is when you said that the foreground and background in the platformer genres, how you need to balance that carefully. Like you can't have the background too busy or popping out too much because you need to focus on what's happening, you know, on the level that you're actually playing on. And I thought that was some really great insight on you. So good job on pointing that out. I hadn't even considered that.
Oh, thanks, George. But no, it's so that you can... because there's going to be a big community of people who are going to want to speedrun this game, right? And speedrunning is huge.
Oh, they're going to be amazing.
Provided that Capcom, you know, follow through on everything, on all of their hopes, that's the kind of stuff where if they put the detail into it, where, you know, people, it's going to extend the life of the game. It's going to maximize the interest in the game as well. So... this is one of those things where I hope Mega Man 11 almost becomes a platform, because I don't think Mega Man 11 is going to be necessarily a huge game or a very expensive game.
I don't think it would be a long game. Like traditionally with Mega Man games, you have your 8 box of bosses or whatever it is. And there may be reasons to revisit them, but it normally ends there. So I'm curious to see what Capcom's solution to that is going to be, because, you know, a lot of, well, pretty much all their other games include DLCs and so forth, and expansions, and even microtransactions to a certain extent.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, no, they have microtransactions. It's not to a certain extent. so I'm curious to see how they plan on extending the life of the single-player-focused experience. I'm hoping that this leads the way to future Mega Man games. Because obviously between Mega Man 10 and Mega Man 11, there was a huge amount of years. Like, we were all shocked and excited when we heard Mega Man 11 was coming. So not only do I want them to extend the life of this product, not by jibbing us out of money, but by further expanding the experience, you know? Like, will they add extra levels? I would like a DLC with extra levels and extra box and extra bosses at the end of those levels. I would buy a DLC like that if I'm loving Mega Man 11 and 4 months down the track, they're like, hey, here's a DLC, here's another 4 bosses and 4 levels with it, and you get 4 different powers. I would be down for that, you know? And I would hope for the success of this game, because that means I can look forward to a Mega Man 12.
Do you know what I would be happy with? Say they charge like $60 for Mega Man 11, and
yeah, which they probably will, thinking about it.
And then, you know, you do a couple of DLCs and they go, oh, hey, Mega Man 12's an expansion, extra $20 on top of that, or 25 or 30. I'd do that, you know, because games are like...
Oh, what do you mean exactly by Mega Man 12 is an expansion? Do you mean instead of a Mega Man 12 an expansion, or...
So, as in...
Like, what do you mean when you say that?
Yeah, so, okay. So, you look at Mega Man 11, all of the assets themselves look fine. You've got all of the same assets and stuff like that. You can cut down production time, or development time, sorry, by just reusing everything and just going, okay, we're just going to create a whole new 8 levels and this, that, and the other, but we're going to use Mega Man 11 as a base for it. And then you just, you know, the same way that Brood Wars was, you know, it was an expansion versus a separate game to StarCraft. Okay, it was based on StarCraft, so you installed it in addition to StarCraft. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So say if you did that and just had an expansion come out with Mega Man on top of Mega Man 11, and, you know, you just pay an extra $30 for it.
Yeah, if it's a big enough expansion, you're totally down for that.
So that would be something that'd be interesting. If it's even possible, you know, there may be heaps of reasons as to why that's completely non-viable that you or I wouldn't know about, but it'd be cool for certain.
Mm. I think it would be based on the install base.
Mm.
So if Mega Man 11 is a huge success and like millions and millions and millions of people have bought the game, they are more likely to buy an expansion if it's a good one than have to pitch the idea of a Mega Man 12. But that being said, though, it can go either way, because a sequel is always more exciting than an expansion. You know, like a great expansion to Mega Man 11, which if it warrants it, totally support. I'm down with you on that one, buddy. But if they, you know, instead say, you know what, due to the success of Mega Man 11, we have Mega Man 12 and it looks even better and you have all these features and you just look at it and the production values is a lot higher because the success of 11 gave them more courage and more confidence in the product, I'd support that as well. But either way, I think it's safe to agree that we're both excited for Mega Man 11.
Mm.
And I really, really like the look of the Mega Man amiibo that is going to come out with 11. How much fun does that little statue look?
It does look pretty cool. Like, I don't normally get excited for that kind of stuff, but when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'd be tempted to spend extra money on that.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, and obviously it would impact the game somehow, you know. Probably give you an extra health thing or be usable in the next Smash Bros. Game. Because Mega Man has made an appearance in those games before. But yeah, even if you don't own a Switch and you're a Mega Man fan, I would buy this amiibo. Just, it triggers the nostalgia perfectly and just looks like a good model. Now, moving away from Mega Man 11, because we love it and we could do a whole podcast on it, but we won't. Wait until the game comes out. Then, I'm not sorry, fellow listeners. I feel I can soften the blow if they just know the storm is coming.
Yes.
The next bit of news, which has a lot of hype around it, it's really interesting, is, of course, Pokemon coming for Switch. Now, it's been revealed that it's coming out this year. It's basically a very pretty remake of Pokemon Yellow, which means that all of the original Pokemon are there, the original 150. And this has a lot of interesting gameplay mechanics that I wanted to swing by you. I know you've read about it, but I want to discuss it all the same. Is they seem to be trying to implement the Pokemon Go fan base, because, you know, that mobile app was a huge success, and I have to admit, I've gone for drives, you know, around and gone for walks and bike rides with Grace, and we've caught a lot of Pokemon. Actually, just give me a second. I'm just going to shut the door. I'll edit this part out. Grace just came home.
Hi, Grace.
Hello. What was I saying? Yeah, so they're combining the Pokemon Go experience, and it's fantastic because you can go for a walk with the Pokemon Go app, you can catch Pokemon as you do, and then you can come home or you can have the Switch on you, of course, because it's a portable console, and you can transfer the Pokemon you caught out in the real world into the game, which is a very exciting concept, and they're even releasing an accessory, which is an actual Pokeball. So you can walk around with a Pokeball, catch Pokemon, have it on there, and then, transfer. So that would really make you feel like a trainer. And you can play co-op. So I think that is really fun. You can play the whole single player campaign in co-op with your friend and even do team Pokemon battles. Like, how cool is that?
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a fantastic idea, and I think it's a brilliant way to maximize that fan base. You know, the people who are mad into their Pokemon Go, trying to capture that that base of people and get them into the Switch and to get that crossover. I think that's brilliant. It is a really clever way to not only start a sideline of Pokemon games, because I reckon this is not going to be the last time we see like a Let's Go with Pikachu and Eevee. And by the way, I'm so glad there's Eevee as a starter Pokemon. Yes!
Exactly. I haven't even mentioned that, but listeners, if you didn't already know, when the Pokemon Switch game comes out this year, so you don't even need to wait that long, we're already halfway through the year, is you'll have two editions. You will have a Pikachu edition and an Eevee edition. And they'll follow you around, you know, in real time in the actual game itself. So as you're running around, you'll have a little adorable Pikachu or Eevee running, which is pretty awesome. And Eevee's your favorite Pokemon, isn't it, Jamal?
Yes, I love Eevee so much. Because I love the idea of Eevee as a starter Pokemon, because it can become, well, I mean, in the originals, it's only three, Flareon, Jolteon, and Vaporeon. But there's also, you know, others. So it's a whole idea of you have your starter Pokemon and then you can have it be whatever you want. And that's just cool.
Yeah, exactly. Gives you a lot more options. Do you want the fire one? Do you want the lightning electric one? Or do you want the water one? So it gives a lot of a lot of opportunities. And what I find the most interesting about this is there is some shortcomings if you're a hardcore Pokemon fan. For example, you can't fight wild Pokemon. Now, traditionally, when you come across a Pokemon, you fight a wild Pokemon, you fight it with your Pokemon, weaken it, and then capture it. But because they're migrating the Pokemon Go players, who there's a lot of a more casual fan base there, and may not even be experienced at all in a traditional Pokemon game, in the Switch Pokemon, you catch Pokemon just like you do in Pokemon Go. So it's just you know, flicking the ball and trying to improve your chances and so forth. But as much as I originally did not like that idea, because I'm like, oh, they're dumbing it down or something, actually, I think it's good, because Pokemon Go players can feel right at home. They can capture wild Pokemon. They'll know what to do straight away. And normal battles are still a thing as well. Like when you fight other trainers, it's your turn-based battles, you know? It's there. And if you're playing co-op, you can actually both throw a Pokeball at the same Pokemon to increase your chances, which I think is pretty cool. Visually, this game, it does look nice, but it isn't that groundbreaking Pokemon game that many were expecting, since this is the first proper Pokemon 3D adventure we've had since the GameCube. So many generations ago. And what's fascinating about the whole thing is I thought, right, okay, this isn't as visually impressive as I was hoping, and you can't fight wild Pokemon, but I still enjoy this. What I wasn't expecting was for Game Freak to turn around and say, hey, this isn't the core RPG Pokemon game. That comes out 2019. And then you're like, what? Like, what's going on here? So I wanted to bounce some ideas off you, Jamil. What do you think this means? Like, why would they release a more casual-friendly Pokemon game in 2018 and not say this is the main game, and say, no, in 2019, we're going to have the real Pokemon game, like the more serious one? What do you think that means? Like, what can we guess here we can expect from the 2019 game, or why they feel important to point out that there's even another one coming?
I think it's because they, you know what, they wanted to, they had the sense to avoid a Bethesda scenario with Fallout, because they wanted to create a sideline that is a different experience that plugs into Pokemon Go, but they also wanted to have another property which is its own thing that is more traditional. And so they're basically just going, you know what, we're Game Freak, we have enough money, we can just have our cake and eat it. So we'll have two cakes and eat them both.
I love that. It's like, we are Game Freak. People, are you aware of this? It's like, yeah. Oh, we are, aren't we?
Because
like-
Game Freaks are industry leaders and have been for 20 years, you know.
Well, yeah, they're the ones that have been doing Pokemon since the very original one. Like, Pokemon as a whole actually started with the Game Boy game, and the Pokemon anime, the cartoon series, came out later. So there's a little bit of a trivia for anyone listening. The Pokemon original Game Boy games weren't based on the anime. The anime was based on the game. The game came out first. So that world was first established with Pokemon Red and Blue. Oh, dear God. I was, like, still in high school catching the bus.
Weren't we all?
Oh my goodness. As you were saying, it's launching 2019.
Yeah, and so it's just basically them just going, we aren't going to... we're going to maximize both of our install bases now. You know, our fan bases, the Pokemon Go versus the people who still get consoles. And then we'll also have a traditional console game that is going to, you know, push us forward. So it's just very much a thing of, we do the nostalgia thing, we use the Pokemon Go thing, but we're still doing new stuff as well. I just think it's just... It's because they have the luxury of all that capital to use and those resources, so they're just going to use them and they're just going to leverage both.
It makes sense. It makes sense. Like, if they can do it, if they do have the manpower and the finance to do it, absolutely. It lays a lot of groundwork as well. Like, there's a lot of people who played Pokemon Go who still play it, but there's an even larger percentage who have stopped. That's still a large potential market that they can get tapped into and give them a reason to return to playing Pokemon Go, so they can get in there. What I reckon personally is going on here, I've given this quite a bit of thought, and I think they're almost using this Pokemon Switch game, the one coming out this year, as a little bit of a testing ground for the Switch hardware, because Game Freak have been working on Nintendo handhelds all this time, and let's be honest, the power difference between the Nintendo Switch and the 3DS is like a solar galaxy away from each other. Like, it's not even night and day. I feel the expression isn't even strong enough. The visuals, the power that 3DS has is absolutely nothing to the Switch. And I feel that, I'm hypothesizing here, that Game Freak was feeling the pressure, because when we all heard that there was going to be a main Pokemon game on the Switch, we all lost our minds. Like, we've been waiting for a proper, you know, gaming console version of Pokemon for ages. We want it to be big, we want it to be beautiful. But the thing is, Game Freak has never worked on the game consoles, and especially the Switch. So I reckon they're going to learn what they can about the hardware through the 2018 release, learn all the ins and outs of the bugs and get players' feedback. And by then, they can apply what they've learned to the 2019 release in the exact same way that the Zelda developers did with the Wii U. So, on the Wii U, they re-released Wind Waker, which was originally a GameCube game, but they did an HD version of it. And it was more than HD, it was more than simply high resolution. They redid the textures, they redid the lighting, they added game features. It was a fantastic bundle. And when I was looking at developers behind the scenes and reading up on it before releasing the Wii U, the developers sort of admitted, like, hey, this is the first time we're entering the HD era. We're a little bit unfamiliar with it. And so this gave us a chance to get used to much more powerful hardware and then apply what we've learned to Breath of the Wilds. And as we all know how that story played out, it worked out great. Breath of the Wilds was a runaway success. It was an absolute beauty of a game. Like, it's beautiful. And they learned a lot of their tinkering tools while working on the Wind Waker remake. And I think Game Freak is doing the same. I think they're going to learn how to use the Switch in the 2018 release, so then they can get all serious with the 2019 release. And hopefully by then, they've converted a lot of Pokemon Go casual players into more serious hardcore Pokemon players. So then when the 2019 game comes out, not only do you have longtime fans who are waiting for that, but they have a large amount of potential millions of people they've converted from Pokemon Go into the hardcore Pokemon series.
No, I I agree. I think from a technical standpoint, that's a very smart thing to do as well. Because I was thinking more of a from a marketing thing, but yeah, from gaining that kind of technical insight and capabilities makes a lot of sense.
It does. I think it's a smart move on every front. And also, let's just be frank, two Pokemon games in 2 years. But that is awesome. Switches are going to sell even faster than they already have. And the Switch is already broken God knows how many records. It is like the way the Switch is going, it will end up most likely outselling the Xbox One, which is a huge achievement because the Xbox One came out many years before the Switch even did. The PlayStation 4 we will see, maybe not, just because the PlayStation 4 is at like 70 million units worldwide or 80, or something massive, massive like that. It doesn't really matter. Like as a gamer, you should enjoy each and every console and enjoy it for their strengths and weaknesses. But yeah, I can't wait for these games. And with E3, so many leaks, so many news have come out. We'll end the recording here, but no doubt by the time we do our next recording, E3 would have passed. So you can bet there'll be a lot of surprise announcements. We will have strong opinions on them because that's just who we are, and we will discuss it here. So Jamel, thank you for joining me once again, and everybody at home, thanks for listening. And to our loyal followers at Positive Gaming Space, we absolutely love you guys and girls. We'll connect with you then. We will come up with some other topics and probably discuss in the next time. So until then, thanks for listening. And Jamel, your famous quote,
Well,
please.
thanks for listening, everyone, very quickly, and keep playing games and don't run out of lives.
Trademarked. Booyah!
Bye.
All right, see you, everybody.